You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com. And streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Blacklist After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Blacklist After Show.
If you haven't got problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one.
Yeah.
That's it.
Bing is for doing.
Woo.
And we are doing our very first Blacklist After Show, AfterBuzz After Show. With me, Joe Braswell. I'm joined by the lovely Julia Kearley.
Hi, I'm happy to be back. I miss you guys.
I am not joined by Nando Velasquez.
You certainly are not.
That MF who should be here. I'll start the show like that. And I'm not joined by Joe Sanfilippo. That dirty son of a gun. But we are joined.
It's so much better.
So much better. We are joined by the lovely Charles Baker.
Glad to be here.
And we're very, very happy to have him here. Who you may know, most of you, unless you've been under a rock somewhere, know him as Skinny Pete from a little tiny show called Breaking Bad.
I haven't heard of it.
Yeah, it's a
what
show.
Is that? What's
it's
that about?
It's a thing.
It's a cable show.
Yeah, it's not a big time network show like The Blacklist.
Yes.
But it does okay for itself.
It's all right.
But he's also a very interesting character that we'll find a little bit more about as the season progresses, and maybe we'll get some information out of him this episode. In The Blacklist, which is our brand new show that we're doing here. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for joining us here at The Blacklist. If you do know us from other shows like The Following and Hannibal and Bates Motel and others, thank you for joining us and finding us. If you're listening to us for the first time, we do a couple other shows here. And we'll be doing this show. We're very, 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 very excited about it.
Holy Blacklist pilot.
Right.
Oh, my God. I'm reeling a little bit.
That's a great pilot.
That was a badass pilot.
That was as good as the pilot as I've seen.
Dude.
Yeah.
That's where it's at.
I mean, the job you did writing that pilot.
Yeah.
No, it was really as good as the pilot I've seen. I'm very excited to do this. Now, we've been to move a little bit to your left, Julia. I'm just telling you. Yes, there you go. There's been a lot of buzz, a lot of anticipation for the show. I mean, NBC has been promoting the crap out of it.
Rightfully so.
And rightfully so, now we find out. I've seen like 1,000, I'm a criminal, I've seen 1,000, billboards, everything else. We were at Comic-Con this summer.
Oh, yeah, it was huge. It was everywhere at Comic-Con. Such a big presence there.
Yeah. And a lot going on with the show, and I was really kind of getting scared. I was really, really excited about it, and then I started getting scared, like, what if it's not good?
I know, I had that same feeling.
I was getting the same way. I was like, ooh, what if they're, like, really overhyping
this? Like, they're really going in. And then there's been all this talk about sort of, you know, I mean, I'll just get out of the way right now. I mean, you know, Homeland's such a gigantic hit for Showtime, and so there's been this talk of sort of the broadcast networks trying to find their versions of Homeland, their versions of great shows like Breaking Bad, but Homeland's a one where sort of, so Blacklist was one of those shows along with Hostages that has supposed to be that sort of homelandy
sort of that
feel.
National security at
risk.
Yeah,
and you don't know who's what. There's 24. Yeah. There's twists, and you don't know, and it unravels over the course of a season. And you know what? I'm all in. As many of those shows as possible for me. I loved this pilot. I don't know, Julia.
This pilot blew my mind a little bit, guys.
All right.
Like, I'm still sort of, like, processing all of it. There's so many layers that are being built in already.
Yeah.
And that Spader, what is he up to?
Dude.
Everything he does. Everything he touches is like, what's happening in that head of yours, man?
Well, here's the thing about Spader. I will say that, you know, I've spent you know, I tried not to overread, like, read a lot. I tried not to, because I really wanted to actually, because I'm one of these guys who, like, I do deep dives and I want to, like, find out everything and read. But this one, I'm like, you know, I want to experience it clean. I don't want to, like, overdo it. But, I, you know, those promos, I, those promos were over and over and over again. They kept doing that bit, I'm a criminal bit, and the promos, I kind of was like, eh. I don't know. I mean, like, it's, I get it. And the Spader's great. I'm excited about it. But what he delivered in the pilot, and even that line, I'm a criminal, which is sort of chopped in the promo, the way he delivered that entire sort of line and the few monologues that he had were spectacular. It's so much better than I even expected in the promos. And the promos did not do his performance justice. I don't know. The promos probably did the show justice, but the promos did not do, in my opinion, Spader's performance justice at all.
Which I actually kind of enjoyed because, you know, I saw the first promos and I thought, oh, that looks like fun. Oh, right. That's a fun line. I mean, it was kind of, I mean, I saw that line over and over and over again because, I mean, granted, we've been in the thick of it at Comic-Con and just getting prepared for the show. But just actually watching it and seeing it and seeing his the entirety of his performance. He's so smart. He's so articulate. Mm-hmm. has such this this masterful puppeteer like aura about him.
Well, yeah, and it's the humor. I mean, it's Spader, right? It's mm-hmm. He brings this air, like, he has this sort of, like, I mean, he has a smug charm that he's had since, you know, Pretty in Pink, when he's got the pop collar.
Steph!
You know,
my
Steph.
My favorite is Steph!
My man Steph. Like, when you kids are ready to get serious, I'm going to come upstairs.
Brilliant work. He's such a brilliant actor, yet it always goes back to that.
The
for
pop
me.
Collar really and, the, does. And the feathered hair.
Yeah. I hope I don't offend when I say that to him, but my God, that's where my love affair began with Spader.
You know, mine too.
It just,
actually.
I mean, it grew from there, but what a great jumping off point.
So he has a sort of smug charm, and he's infuses this with this humor, and then he has this ability to sort of play, which we haven't seen in a while, but he plays a great villain. And so he had this sort of in Boston Legal, he had this role where he was sort of like very ambiguous sort of guy, and he was a good guy, but he's kind of sleazy, but he was this guy. It's a perfect Spader role. The same thing in Lincoln, he had to play the same kind of character, which is his best. And now we see him here, he's a master criminal, but he's a good guy, he has a heart, but he's smug, he likes the finer things in life, he doesn't want to be bothered with your
but then he has a little bit of sleaze in there as well,
you know,
which
what
he always brings to his characters, just a little bit. There's just a little bit of of rough and tough sort of sleaziness, and I like that.
Well, we're going to get to, I mean, Charles is here joining us in town. We're just yapping away. We're going to get to...
We're excited.
Go on.
No, we're going to talk to you, like, in depth, and we would ask you a lot of specific questions about the show and everything else. But while we're on it, you know, I mean, you had a day, a couple days with Spader? Like, how was...
A day.
Okay. So, you know, give me... What's it like being with the Spade Man?
It's intimidating. I mean, he's who he is. It's he's very quiet. He's real shy, and he's really focused on what he's doing on this show, and he's real focused on the entire product, not just himself.
Right.
And it's really neat to see. Right. It's how just intense he is, invested in this being a great show.
Sure.
And I think that's a lot of why this pilot is so great. It's because of his eye and his thoughts that he's been throwing in.
Is it one of these things where he sort of his presence on the set sort of elevates all the other actors and everyone's like, you know, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's one of the things I love about this business. When you work with people like him and the other guys I've gotten to work with, you have to get better or you go home.
Right.
And so yeah, it's a challenge and it's a learning experience for me, and it's great to watch. And I keep trying not to try and act like him while I'm performing with him. You know,
yeah, it's hard. I would be doing Spader imitations all day long.
And right off the bat, I mean, very first scene, very first line.
Yeah,
it's your mug.
Yeah,
with the Spader.
Yes,
I know it's not predictions time. I know but we'll predicting a. A nice long relationship between you and Spader in this.
So.
I'm just saying.
Looking.
I know it's not prediction time. I couldn't hold it in. Just had to say it.
So let's talk about the pile a little bit. Let's get into it because let's just sort of walk through it because it was great. Listen, you know, it was so we have this is a Joe. This is, you know, directed by Joe Carnahan, who I mean, he's an EP on it along with John Bokenkamp. I don't want to mention his name. Who's you know written some cool things. Julia, what's he's got? He's got a
the Call with Halle Berry recently, and one of my favorites. I love Taking Lives with Angelina Jolie and Ethan Hawke. I love that movie. The twist gets me every time.
Yeah,
so he's a brilliant writer,
and he's good at the thrillers and kind of like. So he's done a great job.
He's twisty
with this, and then so I like the combination between him and Carnahan because Carnahan has done Narc and A Team and some other cool stuff that he's done. So
Smoking Aces,
Of course, and So I mean, it was a really good match, and I think that the trend here in not only in cable but also in broadcast now is sort of bring this sort of cinematic value to these shows, and then we're seeing this larger and larger the stakes are raised, the budgets are raised, you got these movie directors coming in, and this felt like a movie. This felt like a cable situation. Big budget set pieces, like thrills. I mean, that was a good hour of action television.
Everything
well written,
is definitely elevated to the heights.
Yeah.
We've seen this trend over the last few seasons. Sure. And like you said, the budgets are bigger, the casts, everything involved. Right. That scene on the bridge.
Yeah.
Oh,
great set piece.
Heart was racing.
As good as any set piece as I've seen
as
in the
anything,
action movie.
Yeah.
It was
same
really
caliber.
Well directed and had me. There's not a single scene that didn't have me. In terms of all the action scenes, the suspense scenes, all worked for me. I loved it. And it actually had three of my favorite sort of things I love in these types of movies. It had the situation room, which I love. I love the whole listen up, people. Right. I love the whole it's the Bourne Identity.
The exposition room.
The exposition room. It's just the Bourne Identity. It's the Ed Norton and Bourne, the Bourne Legacy and Chris Cooper and all those guys. It's that, listen up, people. We've got a situation in our hands. Everyone's scrambling around. I love that. It's my favorite moment. They had one of those. They also had the big, in what sort of high level agency thriller is incomplete without the big board? You gotta have the big board.
Always.
Yeah. The big board.
Everything. Move things
They're
around.
Moving things around. You got this
Pictures,
guy. The arrows are pointing.
Things are circled.
The yarn shifting from one to the other.
They got the big board.
Is this a serial killer?
Yes.
Or
I love it. And of course, and I got it, they had it. And it does not get old. You would think it would. But, the bomb, I'm skipping ahead. But the old, red wire, blue wire, cut the wrong wire, the time accelerates. like, what's going to happen now? Oh, he's going to cut the wire. Of course.
Oh, yeah. Why didn't I think of that?
But, all those tropes are, look, I'm a sucker for all those. And I'm not going to lie.
If it ain't broke.
The classics
if
work.
If it ain't broke. The classics work. So, let's get into it. We have a lot of characters here. We have a lot of familiar faces, right?
Oh yes.
Some not so familiar faces.
Oh yes.
The first two familiar faces we see is my man Mike from Homeland makes an appearance.
Diego.
Yes.
Diego. How do you say?
Klatendorf.
Diego Klatendorf.
Klatendorf.
That's a handsome guy.
That's what it looks
like.
He's
not too shabby.
I'm a heterosexual male. And I'm not threatened by saying this.
Yeah. Just saying.
I wouldn't kick him out either. that's funny, Lemieux. Oh, Stephen Lemieux on the boards. Steven. I forgot to introduce my man, Stephen. Hi, Stephen.
Hey, guys.
It's true.
Back to Diego.
Back to my man, Diego.
Is he going to be my crush for this season? Always have one.
It's good to see good old Mike, from Homeland. Mm-hmm. It's also good to see my man, what's his name? Dimple Chin.
Harry Lennix.
Mm. Actor of the stage
that dude.
And screen.
He's got a presence.
He's a super that dude.
He is that.
He's the
dude.
The ultimate black that dude.
He's the guy.
He's that guy that one guy, the thing, the Matrix dude. He's always some military cat, or he's always some guy, and his back is straight, and he's giving you the dialogue like this. He's telling you, Julia and Charles, time and control.
I don't know. I'm not buying it from you, Bros.
Come on.
I'm not getting it.
No, that's why I'm not.
Try harder.
I'm not an actor. I'm just some dude. I'm some black guy.
And he's the black guy.
Yeah. I'm just some dude. I can't act. No, but I love him, and he's great. But our lead,
Megan Boone?
Megan Boone.
Our girl?
Megan Boone.
Yeah.
She's...
I want to kick her out either.
She's great.
I'm just kidding, honey.
That Megan Boone.
Just throwing it out there. She's a looker.
Well, again, for a pilot and like as an introduction to a character, I mean, like she was, I believe her. And this is my problem with, especially a lot of like, you know, broadcast, you know, stuff, network stuff. I will say it's hard to find that believable lead.
Right.
Especially an unknown. And especially like, you know, I'm not going to, you know, there's a female, tough female lead in FBI agent top. And there's a bunch of archetypes there that we've had before her from Clarice all the way down to Claire Danes, you know, we have them all. But, you know, she was believable. I believed her from day one. I believed her.
She was definitely a very human character. She wasn't just this one archetype. She wasn't just like the fresh off the boat FBI agent. It's my first day. And that runs the risk of being, you know, of erring on the side of a little cheesy. And, you know, we've seen it. Like the brand newbie.
Right.
Wide-eyed, doe-eyed. But she was definitely she brought such a humanity to it. And,
right.
And you know, that's a tribute also to the writing and the directing as well, that it is it's just the pilot and she's already become such this formed character, almost fully formed character. Granted, obviously there are many layers that we have to peel through.
I
sense that there are many, many secrets.
Yeah, sure.
Deep, dark, hidden, dank secrets.
I'm sure there are.
Find out about, but I'm invested.
I'm way invested. I think that you hit on something really important. I feel like this is, you know, this is just sort of genre TV at its best here. And this is something that we've all seen, you know, the agency thriller, as I'm calling them. You know, there's an agency and there's a guy on the loose and there's a hotshot, you know, new coming agent who's going to help do the thing. And there's the boss and there's the thing. Like, we've seen all of this stuff before. And I think it's a dynamic testament to the writing and directing and, of course, the acting that makes this all feel super, super fresh.
Right.
Because, I mean, it's definitely a fresh concept, but like it's swimming in the same pool that we've seen before, that we all sort of want to see this pool, but how do you take that same pool and then make it into something fresh? And I think they've done it in a pilot, you know, and something sustainable, because TV is TV. TV is not a 1 hour situation. It's a 24 hour.
But they're
situation.
Also building upon that thing that we've always seen, and they're building these very intricate relationships.
Right.
You know, they're setting the stage for these really intricate relationships that are very mysterious, and we want to know who the bad guy is, but we also want to know. I mean, I feel like this entire thing will be built upon their relationship.
Of course.
I mean, that's got to be the crux of this entire show.
You know, like, you know, we'll be able to peel the layers back as to who Spader is, and and, you know, what, you know, what, who, you know, we'll know, learn more about him. We'll learn more about everyone in the entire FBI and all these criminals that come in each week. You know, they set it up as a procedural, because every week we know that we'll have
a
different person on the blacklist, which I'm sure is very long. Hopefully it's 2 or 3, 4 seasons long.
Hopefully
it's more, but it's a long list of criminals and they all have to be got. So, well, let's get into a little bit of the specific plot. So we have Spader, and maybe if you're listening to this, you've obviously seen it. So this is no spoilers here, but so Spader shows up in the FBI field office, and he, you know, with you, with you,
and you call him sir.
Yes.
Just
and,
saying.
Hand him his briefcase.
Yeah.
Yep. Maybe you're his little lackey.
Lackey? That's not lackey.
Lackey is the wrong word.
That was the other show I was in.
Yeah.
I was a lackey in that.
So I choose the wrong word.
Yes. He's like
his Alfred to
Alfred to his Batman.
Thank you.
Okay, sorry.
At least that's what I've been saying to everybody.
I take it back.
Hoping that the blacklist guys will go, hey, that's a great idea.
Alfred. Let's make an
Alfred. Alfred.
So he shows up. He comes in with him in a very cool scene where he sort of gives his name and then sort of like puts his briefcase down. It's like, okay, here we go. And that was sort of a very cool introduction. I think that like what I liked about the way they got into all of these characters is that, you know, we talk about exposition. I mean, that's the big problem with pilots. Like, you have a lot to get done in a pilot. You have to sort of explain all these characters. You have to see all these characters, be introduced to them, and then have them sort of explain who they are without it being like, boring. And they, again, great job by John, like, in giving this expos, like, some real life in that we have Spader show up. He's a criminal, so we get his whole bio and what he's done, where he's at. He gets to say it. The FBI gets to say it. We know all that stuff. Then we have that brilliant scene where when they first bring in, I can't remember our main protagonist's name. That's
Elizabeth Keen.
When they first bring in Elizabeth Keen, he says, you know, profile yourself. And it gives a great opportunity for her to give the exposition about, well. Yeah,
there's her background.
Here I am. I am a Capricorn, and I was born. And, you know, but it was really great. I think those are really, really smart ways for us to get to know our two main protagonists and really get into the story. And then also we have this thing, and we do Hannibal as well. Mm-hmm. And so, we have this thing that maybe Thomas Harris created, or maybe it's Jonathan Demme or both of them, this whole Clarice sort of, you know, Clarice Lecter dynamic. We have the young FBI agent or whatever it is. It's the one person on one side of the wall, the other person on the other side of the wall.
Quid pro quo.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah, exactly. we have that. I mean, we have that here. And, it works. I mean, again, we've seen it before, but the way they're doing it is really cool. Those are the things that I really sort of appreciated right out of the back of this thing. I mean, what did you notice?
I agree completely. I was definitely – I could draw some parallels to the Hannibal, Clarice, or even Lecter and Will. And there's an appreciation for their intelligence and insight.
Right.
And it seems that they both have something to offer each other. Although I am interested – they would throw out these little tidbits in this pilot of how closely he's been watching her and keeping tabs on her and speaking of her to his colleagues. Right. You know, he even mentions something about her highlights, and she looks a little less Baltimore. Like little things that he's throwing in here and there that could definitely just be glossed over. But I'm like, oh, that's creepy. Why do you know that? Why do you know that? How much do you know?
Well, there's a lot of stuff like that. Like that conversation he had with, I want to call him Zhukov, but he's from the Americans.
Zumani.
the conversation with Zumani about, like, did you do what I told you? Did you do this? Yes, old friend, we did this. It's like a conversation that, like, this is part of their plan, yet he is still trying to stop Zumani, or is it part of the plan the whole time?
Zumani, you think, thought he was in on the plan. He just wasn't in on the entire plan.
This is a thing. Yeah.
He didn't know the plan ended with his plan being foiled and him dying. But,
exactly.
P.S., can we talk about Zumani's nasty, pussy, boil-ridden neck?
That's another thing. That's another one of my favorite tropes. So we have, like, the villains with the unexplained sort of, like, you know, I love this unexplained. It's like, you know,
my understanding that was part of the chemical burn.
That destroyed
him, that killed his family, and that's pretty much the reason why he's doing
it. Chemical burn. Yeah.
It's a good goddamn thing,
Thank
Charles.
God
is here.
Hey, I read the script.
It's a good thing you're here.
I had a little bit. I read it and I saw it. So.
Man, lost without you.
Yeah. I should mention, because, you know, we're going to get some level of shit at some point, but, like, we do this show, for those who don't know, we watch the show. You know, pretty much live.
Real
and then
time.
We run right in here and we tape it after we just saw it. So we don't have the luxury of sort of, like, really digesting it and really thinking of rewatching.
To really talk it out.
Because we'll rewatch it tonight and then rewatch it again and be like, oh, everything. So inevitably we get our folks call in like, you missed this one thing. You're like, duh, that was a thing. And it's like, we just saw it.
That chemical burn. You know.
In their defense, I was eating popcorn pretty loud for a lot of it. So they might have missed some stuff.
Yeah, I totally missed the chemical
So the other thing that we find, like, he mentioned the whole the husband, you know, the whole, like, you won't find out the truth about your husband, in a great scene. I'm jumping around, but in that scene where Elizabeth comes back and pokes the pin in his carotid artery, that was like
just a thing. Let me just pick up this pin and just
that was
poke you right there
was,
in the
that
neck.
That was punk rock.
That was like
that was dope.
It's like she's done it before.
Yeah, and these are the things
she didn't even hesitate.
These are the things you're peeling about the layers of this character, who, you know, get the vulnerability, and you see. I mean, it's a good range she did there. You get the vulnerability with the husband, and then you see the whole them at the beginning, and then you see the vulnerability with when she found out the. You know, oh, we have a girl. Oh no,
they were definitely playing with a theme of parental or maternal instincts for her character,
sure.
And And he even said, Spader said at one point, do you really want to be a mother or something to that extent?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's something we're going to be playing with a lot during the season or during the series. And I mean, from the very get-go, she even said, the most important thing is my, obviously I'm paraphrasing, but, most important thing is our family. They're going through this adoption. She's so excited it's a girl. They talk about her absentee parents. He was a criminal. And she even says when she was profiling herself, something about, I can't read my writing. Something about how she thinks she can rewrite her own past by adopting a child because she was lacking in that.
Right. That makes sense.
Just throwing that out there. And then the little girl and the bracelet, she never takes it off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just I saw the old bracelet.
That bracelet.
I love that, you know, going back to that whole set piece again, which we talked about, which is a great action sequence and everything else, but it was like another moment of, she said, Spader goes, there'll be some sort of diversion of some sort.
Yeah.
As they're driving, he's like, oh, we got to turn around, chemical spill. I'm like, oh, the old chemical spill trick.
Yeah.
Not the old chemical spill, but, it was still the car, even though that was in the promo, the car crashing into the side was still a dramatic moment, you know.
And that was a really cool motif they had of the hand, the gloved hand over the shot out window with the gas mask and then counting down.
Shout out to Carnahan, man.
That got me. That will stick with me, actually. That was good.
Very good.
For lack of a better term, that was really good.
It was good. It was very good. So I, you know, listen. I'm sure we have more people in the FBI to see, although there was, if Joe Filippo was here, he would hark back to one of his FBI WTF moments which, you know, I love the show, but there's a moment where let's ask him. He's right in his house. Where'd he go? He's gone.
Ask this guy.
And then it was you. But I love the like the bed's gone. They look out. He's dun, like dun, in the dun, hat. Dun. He's just like strolling away and
walking away.
I love it.
It would have been better if they
didn't think to keep anybody on the street.
The world's most wanted criminal.
Tied the bed sheets together.
Yeah.
He's the world's most wanted criminal. We didn't even think. But yeah, he got away and whatever.
And thank God he did.
Yeah, because
it worked out.
It all worked out. So I'm all in the blacklist. We'll talk some predictions and get into some other things later. But I think that. We made it very clear that we love the show. I don't know what more that specifically we have to cover other than that the this season on, you know, the promos look very, very good. There's a lot of things I have a lot of questions that I'll ask you and we'll get hold for predictions. But I mean, why do we think Spader's there? What do we think he's doing there? What do you think his connection to her is? What about the husband who's got the field box of, like, you know, the Bourne Identity, Jason Bourne field box of multiple passports and guns and everything else? Yeah, that was, you know, because he was so...
With that sweet, endearing little smile.
Oh, the glasses and the sweater.
If you need another year, that's okay. Just let me know, baby.
He's got the sweater and his hair is all mussed and he's like, I don't know. My pants are on backwards. I don't even know what I'm doing.
But you look so good.
And then next year he's got a field box with 50 passports and like 100 grand in cash, of course.
That guy.
So yeah, so we'll see what happens there. That actually reminded me a little bit of Alias. That felt a little hark back to some, reminded me of Alias. I watched a lot of Alias, J.J. Abrams, but that whole sort of not knowing who's, you know, the one person's a spy, but I'm a agent and could be a spy too, but we're living together. It's a lot of that stuff. Anyway. Yeah, so we'll hopefully get to see more of him and more how that plays out. And I guess we don't even know if he's a good guy or a bad guy. I mean, our thought is maybe he's a bad guy, but we don't know. Maybe he's there to protect her. So who knows? But and I wonder, you know, I just got to imagine that there's got to be some sort of mole in the old FBI. Some guacamole.
No.
I mean,
don't do that.
What show is come on.
Guacamole?
I know. I'm full
Joe
of bad
Braswell.
Puns. I know. It's better than Fancy Pantsy Dancy. You dancy.
I still love Fancy Pantsy Dancy.
All right. We love that.
Guacamole.
So anyway, so the Blacklist is effing awesome. And hopefully it continues to be awesome. But we're joined here, as we talked about, by our man, Charles Baker. And listen, you know, thank you for coming on.
Oh, thanks.
I know you're in the AfterBuzz Studios for Breaking Bad, so yeah. I appreciate you coming back for our little first show, which we very much appreciate.
No problem.
Let's get into it. Like, you know, we all, that's what, first of all, I mean, you know, congratulations.
Yes.
For
what a night.
Last thank night, you. Big yeah. night.
Hot I was, damn.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a, incredible. big night for you guys. Anna Gunn, mm-hmm. You know.
It's Gilligan.
She hasn't let go of that thing yet. She's
no.
Today she was walking around like white fisting that Emmy. She's really just.
You guys did Conan today, right?
Yeah.
He's had a busy day.
It's been a crazy busy.
Well, and then also best drama, which is well deserved.
Yeah,
and also it's finally. a fitting end to a way to cap off a show which is arguably one of the top 10 best shows of all time, dramas of all time.
Guinness Book of World Records says we're the best.
Oh, does it?
Does it?
What's this stat?
The Metacritic, the aggregate score of all the critics around the country. We've got the highest score ever.
Oh wow!
9 out of 10, something like that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we're just put into the Guinness Book of World Records.
Wow! And our last AfterBuzz show had like an 8, so we're
getting close.
We did this.
No, that's cool. Congratulations. That's fantastic.
That's awesome.
That's
man.
Really awesome news. And
that's huge.
Skinny Pete.
Really
so
excited.
Well, talk to me a little about what it was like. I mean, like just I know you've done this a lot. I'm going to get to Blacklist in a second, but just you know, working with Vince and Aaron and all those guys. Like you know, how was that? How was this experience?
They're awesome. They're just like a big family. I mean. Aaron and Brian they're like a comedy duo now. I mean, when they're together, they've been together so long and working together so long. Mm-hmm. It's really funny to watch because they start bits together when they're in public, when they're just hanging out, and it's fun to watch. But everybody there is just, they're all friends, they're family, and just really proud of what we've done with that show, so.
Well, good. You should be. And to go from that show into, you know, again, arguably, you know, one of the hottest, you know, pilots of this. Right. This was the hottest.
Oh, yeah, this is.
It was a hot. It was a hot pilot. It was a hot, you know, script.
Right.
It was a hot everything, and so you know, it's really a sought after, you know, project to be a part of. So it's really cool that you got to be a part of.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did this role come to you? What was the audition process like? Tell me about that.
I put myself on tape for this one, and I auditioned for the role of Zamani.
Oh, wow.
How's your Serbian accent?
It was horrible.
Apparently,
maybe. That's why I'm playing the guy who doesn't have the Serbian accent.
Did you come in with the burns?
No. I let them just imagine those would be there. The script wasn't too descriptive about how bad that was.
Right.
But I read for that role, and they called back and said, no, we'd love you to play this guy, the man in the gray flannel suit.
Right.
Hmm. And I went, give him a name and you got a deal. So they call me Gray.
Oh.
So we got red and gray.
That's, you know, because 9 and B is gray. I'm like, who the, I mean, I'm like, is he Agent Gray? Is he like, I was just trying to figure it out, like, is he, you know, who is he, a bad guy? Is he a good guy? What is he? And then there he was. I'm like, oh, there he is.
So. That little wink you give in the elevator.
Yeah.
And your scrubs and your very colorful scrubs.
That was good.
That's nice. I like
we're going to be friends.
That's a nice touch.
Get used to this face.
Right. So, I mean, do you have any idea about what is in store? I mean, listen. I know you really can't tell us anything.
Don't worry. I keep ignorant, willfully ignorant of what's going on on the shows. If I don't need to know, I try not to know.
Because this is you watched the pilot with us, fresh, like you had not seen it yet, which is very exciting.
Yeah,
so you obviously read the script, but like again, this is one of the hot scripts around. So what did you, when you read that script, were you like, holy shit, like what happened?
Yeah, I read it and I was pretty much like, yeah, I want to be part of this. This looks awesome.
Did it read as well as it played?
Yeah. It had that same heart racing kind of moments going on. The attack with the little girl in the car. It was kind of heartbreaking to see. You know that her. You know, oh, I'm going to protect you. Well, I'm not going to completely protect you, but I'll find you.
Yeah.
It was really intense to read, and it was just really well done, Joe. Joe Carnahan rocks.
He does rock. Yeah. That guy, I love that guy. I love his, you know, sort of everything about what he brings, his energy, and he does like a crime you know, he's a really good sort of gritty crime action dude. And, like, I really want to see him do more stuff. Hopefully he directs more episodes, you know?
I hope so. I don't know if he will or not, but I hope so.
Well, so we have... Okay, so what can you tell us about Gray? Because we can make our assumptions about Gray. I mean, I think obviously we know that he's the Alfred to Spader's Batman.
Right.
We know that he's a mysterious guy who seems to be his sort of like, you know, his right-hand man, if you will.
excuse me.
Can you tell us anything? Does he have a past himself? Is he a criminal? Is he a former CIA? And actually, very much he was like, welcome home, sir. This seems to be like, he seemed to be familiar with the Diggs himself. So what do you know?
I know very little, really. What I think is that Gray and Red have a history. That probably he's served under him in some capacity for a long time, and he's built trust.
Maybe back in the
him.
Navy.
Yeah, yeah. I think they might have had that kind of past together, because he is his kind of butler. He's his driver. Right. He's his confidant, and that becomes apparent later episodes how Elizabeth Keen may not be the only one he's actually willing to talk to, you know,
right.
and let know what's going on in his mind. And it's a really neat thing for me to be able to do, especially after, you know, playing the dumb illiterate dude.
Sure.
Now I get to drive the Bentley and, you know, wear a suit. So,
right.
Yeah.
Sounds like such a fun character to develop and build from the ground up. And especially with such an incredible actor as James Spader and under the tutelage of such an amazing director and writer. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, what an opportunity.
Right, right. Now, I came into the show really with the, we'd like you to play this character. We don't know if he's going to be back or not. We don't know if he's going to be recurring or, you know, how much he's going to be in it. But, you know, come in and do it and let's see. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to try.
Right.
That's how I did Breaking Bad. I came in as a day player and stayed through 6 seasons.
Sure.
So, like, you know, fingers crossed we can do that again.
Yes, fingers crossed. I'm with you.
I don't think a lot of thought has been put into his character yet. They're about to shoot, like, the 5th episode. I guess they're shooting right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still kind of figuring out who he is. And I haven't really gotten a lot about what they expect from him or are expecting.
Right.
So I'm just kind of making it up as I go along, and as long as they don't, you know, tell me different.
They seem to be liking it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the beauty and the kind of the weird, the gift and the curse of television is that you do these pilot, the way the system works is you do the pilots so far, you know, in advance of the pickup.
Right.
So you get this script, you get the part, you shoot this pilot, you know very little about it, and then you sit around for months, and then it's like, oh, we got it, and then you're like, start tomorrow, and then you're like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
You know? But that's everyone. It's writers and directors and showrunners like, well, who's Gray? You know, it's like a lot of that. So,
well, and they didn't bring me until later, you know.
Right.
So it's we shot the pilot, and then they're like, hey, we got it picked up, and then nobody called me.
Oh, no.
Like,
how long ago did
so,
you shoot the pilot? When did you shoot that?
I'm gonna be wrong. Sometime
but months ago.
Yeah, March.
Yeah.
March? Okay.
Earlier in the year.
Okay.
I know exactly when. The St. Patrick's Day Parade was going through New York City on my way.
Well, March,
to the
okay.
set.
Yeah,
March 17th.
I was almost late for work, sitting in my car. How much am I paying to watch this parade, dude? Come on.
Yeah, like so that's a long time ago to be. And so, like, just a little bit about this. We talked about, like, you know, how do you prepare for this? But, like, do you have to sort of give yourself your own little backstory? Like you said, maybe this is a guy. Because on the page, it's kind of like, well, this is the guy. So you maybe give yourself this backstory.
Yeah.
And do you go to the writers and, like, you know, I think I know who Gray is. I mean, how does that work?
I
honestly, that's what I've been doing.
Right.
I don't know if that's how it's supposed to go. But, yeah, I come up with my own story, and I'm shy of doing that. Cause I did that with Skinny Pete, and I would come up like my backstory and come back, and they'd have me do stuff, and like, oh, that's nothing like what I thought.
Why not? Why not? Does it?
Yeah.
So I was kind of worried, but this one I went. This is what I think this guy has. I didn't get too detailed yet because I want to know a little bit more about him from what the writers are thinking.
Yeah.
Right.
And we're still kind of up in the air about whether or not I'm going to be how long I'm going to be in it and what. What kind of capacity?
Sure.
Well, I don't think he can function without you.
I don't think so either.
Can you make a call? I'll make a call for you.
If you can make a call,
yeah, I'll do that.
Appreciate it.
I'll take care of it.
If everyone just go ahead and start tweeting to the blacklist, hey, we love you.
Tweet away, guys.
Well, my small backstory, we can move on from this, is that, like, obviously, James Spader, Red is a guy who can trust no one. I mean, he's built his life around sort of being this master criminal who has all these contacts, but at the end of the day, who can he really trust? And the fact that he has this confidant, this guy that he can trust, I mean, there's got to be room for some backstory there.
Sure.
Writers.
Yeah.
Our guy, Gray.
Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make a call, too.
Right on.
Julie will make the first call.
Yeah.
I'll make the second call.
I'll get the call rolling.
See, that'll do it.
I'll do it. Yeah. I'll call John. I'll call John and Joe. Tell them what's up.
So what's
some background? I mean, people, we know you as Skinny Pete.
Yeah.
We've seen you in some other stuff, and we've seen you here. But, like, you did Conan today, and there was a musical performance.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, there may be some musical background. So give me.
I played violin when I was 4.
What? Skinny Pete plays the violin?
No, I don't play the violin.
He's cultured.
Oh, he was 4.
When I was 4.
Okay.
It was like 40 years ago.
Right. Woo! Everything I knew about Skinny Pete out the window.
This is nuts.
That was my first instrument.
Right.
I studied what they call the Suzuki method, which is learning to play by ear. You learn to play music before you can read.
Right.
And so I started that way, and it taught me how to play by ear. So any instrument I wanted to play, I'd bang on it, figure out where the notes are, and then teach myself how to play it. And that's what I did with the piano.
Oh, wow.
And I took a piano lesson for 2 days from a guy who was a Van Cliburn finalist. And I can't even remember his name. And then I got into college, junior college, I was a vocal major, and we needed to have a secondary instrument. And so I picked piano. And took a class piano, where several students sat in a room with headphones and played. And I took a semester of that. And that's, otherwise I've just been kind of tinkering on my own.
Wow.
So you still play?
Yeah. Yeah. My wife's grandfather gave, of course, passed the piano to her mother and then my wife. So I'm using the same piano at our house that my wife's grandfather took lessons on when
that's
he was
cool.
a child. And it's really out of tune right now.
And do you still sing as well? Are you still a vocalist?
Not the classical type anymore. It takes a lot of work and practice and constant training to stay in that kind of a range. So, but I like to sing and play guitar, mostly just do cover songs. Obscure musicians.
Julia sings a bit.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah, so, Steve, can you give us a little,
give us a C!
Give us a C! We're getting a little duet going here. No, I'm kidding. It's quite all right.
Let me pull out the AfterBuzz harmonica real quick.
Oh, thank you.
I will,
we'll get a band going.
Exactly,
the AfterBuzz band.
Because you know,
the After Band.
I sing.
Right on.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I think you can bust a move.
Actually,
you
I surprised, I surprised Vince Gilligan today with the news that I actually did a Leon Redbone impersonation for radio jingles.
Oh, wow.
In
really?
Texas. And that was my other little gig.
Give us a little Leon Redbone.
Oh no!
That's all right. It's fine. I'm not gonna suggest that. We can look it up. Maybe it's somewhere living in the internet.
Somewhere.
I imagine
it's somewhere
on the internet.
Well, everything is always somewhere these days.
Well, that's great. Well, we're very very happy to have you here. We'll hope. Appreciate all you've done as Skinny Pete and all you will do as Gray.
Yeah.
I'll make the call.
I'll make the second call. And we'll go from there. But I think now, we don't really have any news and gossip as of yet, but we'll get to that
it's
next
only
week.
Only day one.
But thank you. This guy's so
on the ball.
You're on Buzz TV.
Wow, it's got like
we got facts.
Love you. Lemieux's in my head before. Like, he's thinking. I'm zigging, he's zagging. It's like we're a great team. So I got a text. I got a text here from a guy who's named Joe Sanfilippo.
Oh, that guy?
Yeah, that
I've
guy.
I've heard of him.
He is. Yeah, you've heard of him. Mm-hmm. He texted me, and he prediction, and his prediction was very eloquently. The text read, he's her father, which I'm sure everyone thinks, you know. But so Joe, I'm sure Joe thinks that Red is Elizabeth's father, which I think would be a little too on the nose. But
that was
maybe
my thought. That was my first impression was, oh, he's got to be
right.
And then the more I heard people say it, I went, oh, that's a red herring.
Yeah,
that's got to be.
And if you knew Joe, the fact that he said it, it's absolutely
then it's definitely
wrong.
Oh, no.
He's like, I got it. We're like, oh no. I've solved it.
I hope it's not something as lame as like, oh well, he's his uncle. Yeah. He's her uncle. Yeah.
Uncle Red.
Yeah.
Maybe Red was responsible for her criminal father's death.
Oh,
therefore,
I had that thought.
Feels he
well,
needs
like
to take her under his wing, and you know she's been parentless and he's been absentee, being all criminally.
Right.
And now you know maybe he is trying to guide her.
Sure.
Maybe now he's making up for lost time, and maybe he wants her to know that someone's been watching over you all these years.
I agree. That's kind of where I was going. I was agreeing that maybe like he knew the dad, and they were old Navy buddies, or they were old friends.
Or criminal buddies.
Criminal buddies, and his dying wish was, go take care of my daughter.
Yeah.
And so he's doing his thing. But he's also in it for himself because he's asked for, and I love that last scene, like he asked for, like he got very, very serious. He's like, okay, this is how this is going to go.
Mm-hmm.
I need full immunity. I need a real tracker. I need guards. I need this. I was like, oh, Spader.
Yeah.
Like, he's not effing around.
He has a real solid plan.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, it's not just like off the cuff. Like, there is something serious going on, and he has taken the time to really map this out.
Yes, and I like the idea. I like the notion of the plan, like the sort of the, you know, someone has this master plan. And there's another show that we do where someone was supposed to have a master plan that didn't quite pan out last season. The following, I won't but
which one?
I don't want to mention any names. Following, but.
Damn it, we didn't even touch on her scar, her flux capacitor scar.
I have the flux capacitor scar.
Oh, wow.
I have it written down here. I have actually a really good note on that right here. It's you know what my note says?
What?
The scar. That's all I got. So, what do you think about the scar?
Flux capacitor, I think she needs to go 88.8 miles per hour.
That's right. Well, you know, this also leads us to believe that Spader knows,
her
Red
brave.
Knows. Well, Red knows all about where this is coming from because he mentioned, like, I noticed your scar.
It's the first thing he talked about.
Yeah, and you rub it to make I notice you rub it a lot. So he knows her soul
backstory. Well, maybe she was involved in the dad's death, and that's how she got hurt.
All right.
And orphaned, and all of the above.
What do we think about the boyfriend? Is he good guy, bad guy? The husband, that's right.
Yeah.
The husband.
God. I mean, what do you think? I mean, you can't really predict because you maybe know already. But what do you think?
I don't know. That really threw me for a loop. I did not see that coming.
Mm.
I did not.
I didn't see it coming.
I mean, that was a lot of passports and a lot of cash.
Yep. Good guy, bad guy, go.
Good guy.
All right. You just wanted to be a good guy.
So I do.
Sensible sweater.
He's dreamy.
What? I'm just curious. What good guys have? That.
Yeah, what good guys have a fuel box.
A stash of money.
With a stash of cash and multiple passports.
Well, everybody has a past, guys.
I see.
Okay.
That's very true.
And he's saving for his future daughter.
I got it.
Why would they go through all this trouble of adopting a kid?
Here we go.
You know, and build a life.
It's a great cover.
Right.
I mean, that's a lot of hoopla.
And do we have, and what about my and my guy Mike?
I almost said something.
I'm calling him Mike, and it's
Mike,
not right. Mike from Diego. Agent,
what's his character's
Agent
name?
Mike from Homeland.
Donald Wrestler.
Yes.
Agent Wrestler.
He's
just a standard, straightforward agent, right? He's not going to be the guacamole, is he?
Well, you know, if she's having doubts about her hubby, Agent Diego, Agent Wrestler is you know, he's looking pretty good, and they seem to be on the same wavelength. Perhaps they think alike. Maybe,
so maybe a little love connection.
Maybe she'll find comfort in his manly, chiseled arms.
All right. Okay, well, those are some very vague predictions on our part.
Yeah.
But, you know,
it's only
we'll take
one.
That's it. That's it for us.
Yes.
No. That's it for us. Thank you for joining for our very first episode of The Blacklist, episode one, the pilot. We'll be back next week for episode two with Nando Val, Asquez, and Joe Sanfilippo. Not with Charles, but with Julia and myself. Charles, are you on Twitter? Where can we find you, sir?
At Charles E. Baker.
Charles E. Baker. Charles at Charles E. Baker.
I'm following you.
I know.
Julia, where can we find you?
At Julia Carely, JuliaCarely. Find me. And what about you, Joe Braswell?
You can find me at Joe K. Braswell on the Twitter. And on Grantland, ESPN'sGrantland.com, and Geek Magazine.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
What else do I have? That's it.
Blacklist, yo.
Blacklist is on. On and cracking. Thank you for listening. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again next week.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.